15, 20. Welcome to the Northern Business Podcast, a regular discussion with people in the north of England who lead businesses, employ people, and have new ideas to help our economy grow. The Northern Business Podcast is produced by Recognition PR, which serves scores of companies in different sectors across the country, some of which occasionally contribute to the programme. We're kindly sponsored by Vertu Motors PLC, one of the top automotive retailers in the UK, with a network of dealerships representing some of the world's most popular brands. I'm Graham Robb, and in the studio today, we've James Widmer, who's founder and CEO of the Sunderland-based Advanced Electric Machines, a very innovative company. More about that in a moment. Also joining us is Joanne Whitfield, who's fund director at FW Capital. And down the line, he's actually in Birmingham, but he has lots of interests in the north of England, is Tony Stein. He's chief executive of Healthcare Management Solutions. Now, that company manages nursing and care homes all around the country, the huge cluster in the northeast, employing thousands of people with thousands of beds for elderly and vulnerable people. So welcome all. First of all, I'll go to you, Joanne. Tell us about FW Capital. What kind of businesses do you fund and how do you get involved with them?
Okay. So FW Capital is a regional fund manager. We've got operations across England and Wales. I'm responsible for the northeast and Yorkshire and the funds that we manage here, and we are a specialist in investing in small and medium businesses. So we predominantly back businesses when they grow in. We also can provide funding for smaller developments, so we can help people build houses, build factories, that sort of thing, as well as help management teams who want to buy a business. So predominantly we provide debt finance loans, but we do a little bit of equity finance locally too.
That is fantastic. And management buyout is increasingly important. That's a good exit strategy.
Yeah.
And with some of the new laws coming in on inheritance tax and so on. Yeah. Very interesting. We'll look at that in a moment. Tony, you're down the line from Birmingham. You're very welcome. You can be an honorary northerner today because you've got so many premises in the north, don't you? Tell us what you do.
I'm a proud Yorkshireman, I'll say as well. For many years now, for the last 15 years, HCMS has provided a professional management solution for the operation of care services, nursing, residential and specialist services up and down the country. Primarily running them for investors, banks, insolvency practitioners, and occasionally for operators who want to step aside.
Okay, well, we're going to ask you a few things about recent changes because you will have been hit by some of them, I'm absolutely sure. James Widmer, welcome to the studio for the first time.
Thank you.
Now, you were a university spin out, have I got that right?
Absolutely right. So we are Advanced Electric Machines. I'm the chief exec and one of the two co-founders. We're a spin out from Newcastle University, but about 8 years ago now, so not fresh out of the box anymore. What we do is we have designed and we manufacture and we sell around the world next generation, very environmentally sustainable electric motors that take all of the nasty materials out, but at the same time actually improve performance. And these things go into trucks and buses and cars around the world.
And these are manufactured in the northeast.
They are manufactured in the northeast. We have a supply chain that's global, but our manufacturing base is in Washington, just next door to Sunderland, as you said.
Well, seeing that we're on you, we'll just drill down into the business that you're in and how it's been affected by recent events. Now, I noticed that in the northeast of England, and you could apply this possibly to the West Midlands as well, but at a greater scale, but in the northeast of England, 30,000 jobs nearly are dependent on the automotive supply chain. The sponsors of this podcast are the second largest business in the Northeast with a turnover of over 4 billion. Nissan is the largest, turnover of 7 billion. And yet companies like yours have all emerged in the Northeast to supply these automotive businesses. Do you think that this supply chain here, this model, is feeding off itself? Is it an environment, an ecosystem, which is proving fruitful?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the great strengths, I think, of my business is that we came out of a Northeast university, and as a result, we're able to grow in the north. So we're a Newcastle University spin out. We based ourselves in Sunderland. Sunderland has got some of the best automotive manufacturing capability, anywhere in the world, frankly, and that's hugely important when you're a manufacturing business.
Now, this last couple of weeks, the Trump tariffs have caused the automotive sector in Britain to get very upset. Mm-hmm. 25% tariffs. And you've got Jaguar, Land Rover, you've got Nissan exporting to the US, particularly Jaguar, Land Rover. And there's a great worry that you have something like a Range Rover Sport, which cost $80,000 in the US, will go up to nearly $100,000, which will make it anti-competitive with, say, a Jeep Grand Cherokee. That's the basic problem, isn't it? What was your reaction when you saw that tariff?
Well, I think everyone was not taken by surprise, because I think Trump had explained that he was going to be bringing in tariffs. But I mean, I think the scale and the way in which it's been done has caught a lot of people by surprise. And I think for some of our customers, I think it's a concern. For us directly, not so much at the moment. But I think it's extraordinary, the events, and I think the real challenge is understanding what's going to happen next, isn't it? More than anything else.
Now, the government tried to react to this tariff by what it called relaxing the rules for electric vehicles in this country. Now, you may have a different opinion on this than me or the government. My view was that they didn't actually relax them much. Your view might be that they shouldn't relax them at all.
Well, I mean, the future is electric vehicles, in my view, and it isn't just driven, although it is driven by environmental sustainability. But for many people in the future, and we deliver a lot to commercial vehicles, buses, trucks, it's also driven by the cost of actually operating these things as well downstream. So it has to be the direction of travel, I think, in a difficult global environment. I think supporting businesses in the UK who provide income to the UK and thousands of jobs has got to be the right thing to do. But no, we need to keep pushing on the EVs. So
I've just been preparing some material for people in the automotive sector about this. And the consensus of opinion is that people don't like tariffs. People who believe in free markets, myself included, don't like tariffs. But you have to deal with the decisions of the other governments. And Trump seems to have got three policies on automotive. One is negative, tariffs. But if you're in America, the two are positive. If you build a car in America and you make a profit on it, your corporation tax will be lower than otherwise. And the second policy, which is coming in, is if you buy a car in America and it's American made, the interest on the car loan is tax deductible. Now, it seems to me that those are encouraging things on the automotive sector. But here in this country, this month, car tax has gone up. Electric vehicles have been subject to luxury vehicle sales tax. And the manufacturers are subjected to fines if they produce more petrol cars than electric cars over a certain quota. It seems there's a sort of prejudice towards compulsion, coercion and punishment rather than incentive and encouragement.
I think it's a complicated time with electric vehicles, isn't it? I think people have started to the transition, which in my view is absolutely great and is inevitable. I think, though, I think the government finds itself in a difficult position. They've signed up to, net zero by 2040. They're trying to drive towards that. There's
2030.
Thank you. There's been completely 2040 for net zero, I think. But there's been constant changes in the global environment recently. Whether it's not, it's been the events in Ukraine. There was COVID before that. But there's a lot going on. And I think you've also got the situation where as more and more people shift away from diesel and petrol vehicles to electric, that that there is income that comes from operating those vehicles through the tax on fuel, for example, which somehow is going to have to be replaced. And I think this is a tricky balance of different conflicting priorities which is going on. And I think sometimes I'm grateful that it's not me who's having to make the decisions on this. But I do think it's critical, though, that we do find that balance, and that it's the government's job at the end of the day, and they continue to provide the support that businesses need to get them through this transition. Because what I believe passionately in is that we are great at technology in the UK. We've got some great technology which contributes towards electric vehicles in the future, and we need the support to grow those businesses to make sure that they're at the forefront of what's coming in the future.
You're an electric car driver. You came, you probably parked outside our studio here, and you'll have seen I've installed electric vehicle charging. I'm a bit of a slightly agnostic. I have one car that's hybrid and one car that's petrol. Depends on which journey I'm doing, I think. But my staff have all chosen electric when they've had a company car. Do you drive a complete electric car?
I'm afraid I don't. I don't want to have an older car.
And what's the barrier to entry for you?
I think it's my love of classic cars, I suppose.
Well, there you go.
Well, last year I rushed out and bought a new petrol car, knowing that they're going to be effectively rationed over the next few years. I'll have my petrol car, and I've got a hybrid, and so I have two, which is a very luxurious position to be in, I'm sure. But I didn't want to be caught out without the petrol car in sort of 4 or 5 years' time.
Yeah.
Do you think you will switch?
Potentially, we've got it's not a company car scheme, but it's a scheme that you can access through work, which is electric vehicles only. So
yes,
got the potential to do that.
Salary sacrifice kind of
thing? Yeah, that's right. So I've thought about that because we do have two cars in the family. So perhaps the other one needs changing.
And let's bring in Tony. You just had a bit of disruption, so you maybe didn't hear everything that was being said. But what about your car? What are you driving?
Yes, I was an early adopter with the Tesla, and I had a Tesla for 7 years. Well, I had two, and they were great cars, fantastic. I loved it. Got solar panels at home, so I charged it for free during the day. Well, not for free, I paid for the panels, but you know what I mean. But my needs changed, so I'm now driving a big diesel pickup.
Very good.
I got putting concrete in the back of my Tesla.
Oh, so I want to drill down. We've just talked to James about some of the changes that have gone on with the tariffs in his sector, which I suppose his sector will still remain buoyant on electric cars because they didn't move the date. They didn't say 2035, which it was. What about your sector, Tony? A lot of change this month. First week of April, minimum wage has gone up. My goodness, I noticed it. It's very easy to not think... to think you're paying the minimum wage, but then realise you're not because it's gone up quite considerably. And the other thing, of course, employers' national insurance. Talk to me about the effects of that on your multi-thousand payroll.
Yeah, it's significant. And I think there are two parts to the market. First of all, there's the private pay part of the market, at which are price makers. And then there's the publicly funded part of the market and they're price takers.
This is
residential care settings. So if you're running a care home and all your clients are residents are privately funding themselves, then you know, in the face of increases like this, we'll just put the fees up. And whilst it may be unpalatable and in some cases unaffordable, that's what happens, and you can manage that. I think for the other part of the market where you're reliant on fees from local authorities, you are stuffed because you literally are sat there with bated breath waiting to see what the local authority increase will be and whether that will cover the increase in costs. Now, we've seen increases ranging from 0%, Sheffield and East Cheshire, you should hang your heads in shame, and up to 7%. So that's the sort of range that we're working in. The problem is in that part of the market that looks after the funded clients, you know, your staffing costs are something like 70% of your income. So a 10% increase in that needs, you know, just the maths of it, you know, 7% increase in your income to stand still. That's before we take into account everything else. So I think, you know, we're always moaning in the care sector that times are tough. Local authorities are increasingly struggling financially. And what they're doing to manage that is that they're rationing care. So people that need funded care are not getting it. I just heard of a Scottish local authority. I know this is in England, but in Scotland, one local authority have implemented a policy of two out, one in. So basically, they're waiting until two people die that are funded in care before they will admit another one or agree the funding for one to go in. So, you know, that what an awful place to be in if you need care in that particular authority. So, you know, these are tough times. And I think over the next over the next 12 months, certainly in the funded part of the market, there's going to be some distress. There are going to be some homes closed. But what worries me most of all, and I'll just finish on this point, is that with the increasing costs, the first thing that people will stop doing is they're going to stop capital expenditure within the homes. So the homes are going to deteriorate because they're just not going to have the cash to do it. And the second thing that they're going to do is they're going to start to trim staffing. And that's going to directly impact on the quality of care. Now, in England particularly, the regulator, the CQC, that monitors homes to make sure that residents aren't suffering as a consequence of these things, is completely dysfunctional, completely broken. The majority of homes haven't had a visit for 5 years. And so operators, I'm afraid, are probably going to get away with running homes on fumes. And it's to the public's detriment.
Now, that's a bleak outlook, and your sector is almost regulated to almost nationalisation standards. You are, the government is a stakeholder by default in your business, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think it's incumbent on the government to do two things at the moment. One is to fix the issue regarding the regulator and make sure that homes are being monitored and that quality of care isn't suffering. But I also think, and I've said this for 20 years, I've been in this business for a very long time. I was previously in the corporate finance side and then prior to that, an accountant. So I came in from a business perspective, but the funding of the sector is completely and utterly wrong. You know, that local authorities pay for care and the NHS pays for health leads to suboptimal decision-making, let's put it that way. So that's why you end up with what we call bed blocking, horrible expression, but that's why you end up with bed blocking, because people are in hospital, they're being funded by the NHS, and the local authority isn't going to take responsibility and move them out into a care home. So you end up with people fit for discharge. And I think the numbers are widely publicised, there's 13,000 or 14,000 people blocking beds in the NHS. And then the answer is, and this is the crazy bit, the answer is to build more blinking hospitals at enormous capital costs, when actually we've got the beds available if only we clear them out.
Okay. Well, I'll leave your expertise for people to dwell on that. We'll come back to you on another part of the economy soon. And let's talk to you, Joanne. You heard him talk about capital. FW is capital, is providing capital. Yeah. Is the current economic climate conducive to doing deals, or is it a period of uncertainty where you're really being picky on who you do a deal with?
I think it's funny, isn't it? So I suppose the end of the market that we work in with small and medium businesses, I think that the last 5 years has been crazy, hasn't it? With uncertainty, the level of uncertainty is now certain that it's a lot. And I think this is the latest, isn't it? I think business confidence is generally low, but SMEs are having to get on with it. We saw a bit of a dip sort of back end of last calendar year, just after the budget news, while people took stock. But I see in terms of inquiry levels coming through in the new year, people have just decided, we just got to get on with this, because we have to make the best of this. We kind of know what's coming now in terms of national insurance. And to be honest, with a lot of the businesses that we're working with, that's the biggest problem. And that has been the biggest problem for them to manage.
And I'm noticing in my own business practice that this month of April, people are saying, well, just see how it turns out. And I think that people are starting to phone up with plans, but they're not willing to push the button with plans.
Yeah.
And maybe May, June, buttons will be pushed.
Yeah. And I think, look, we're seeing people come to us for all sorts of different reasons. And what we are seeing in our portfolio is potentially companies that are maybe not recruiting as heavily as they would have done, maybe looking at ways that perhaps they can automate. So maybe capital expenditure in that respect will save them in other parts of the business. So it's that sort of thing. I think it's that pause for thought in terms of headcount, but actually there's quite a lot of work for people to be getting on with, and they do need to be able to deliver that in terms of capacity within the business.
We talked about Donald Trump's tariffs, but there is a byproduct of the tariff announcement, and that is that the markets in the industrialized world have gone a bit crazy with huge drops. Has that sentiment affected your own sentiment about the economy, or do you just see it as a market thing, a correction?
I think it's a, you know, you've got to look at these things in the longer term, haven't you? The sorts of funds that we're managing are all about trying to sort of balance the books of the economy, supporting regions that particularly haven't had enough investment over the years. So we're outside of the southeastern London. So we're trying to support those businesses to level the playing field a little bit. And I think that's just what we've got to focus on. We've got targets to deploy in the market. Yes, we're looking for good quality businesses, but there are plenty of those around. And actually, sometimes when there is uncertainty in the market, it provides businesses like ourselves with a bit more opportunity, because potentially mainstream lenders might get a little bit more reticent to do deals. Mm. So it perhaps gives us a little bit more opportunity to support those businesses that look really good in terms of opportunity and have got a good business plan.
I mean, it does look so, particularly with some of the journalists that are reporting on it, they love to blow up a story more than maybe they should. What was your concern or non-concern over the market turbulence we've seen over the last few days?
Well, I mean, it's been quite something to watch, hasn't it? And everyone, I think, should be worried, because another big global shock after, you know, one global shock after the other, as I said earlier, is really really problematic. As I said, though, I think the great unknown with what's going on in the US at the moment is what happens next. I don't think anybody seems to be able to judge that. So I think I probably share the view of many people, which is I keep an eye on what's going on, but don't focus on the detail day by day.
And maybe
which you said is you got to look over a longer period for this.
And people maybe have just got a bit too used to having cheap exports to America from the Middle East rather, not from the Far East rather than from us, and our own country a bit too used to having Far East imports. I mean, you're in a sector where components have been shipped in, but well, that, in the Northeast, I we're mean, trying that, to make them, aren't
that
we?
That may be a downside, though, for, you know, for the UK of this, is if these tariffs stick. Mm. I mean, you know, these huge Asian companies. If you look at electrification, the big leader in electrification at the moment is China.
Yeah.
If they can't ship their product to the US, where are they going to ship their product to? Mm. You know, where is the steel going to go that's coming from China that was going to go to the US? I mean, there are significant risks to the UK economy and UK businesses going forward. But I, you know, so who knows what they're going to do? The thing you know about what's happening in the US at the moment is it could change tomorrow.
Yeah,
so I think the thing is to give a bit of time to see how it's set.
I dug out a quote from Warren Buffett, the famous investor who still runs Berkshire Capital, and he said, markets are in the short term voting machines, but in the long term weighing machines. So you've got to take a longer term view than just what happens next Monday.
Yeah.
Tony, you've been in corporate finance. Let's get you to weigh in on this question. A weighing machine or a voting machine? What is the market?
I think the simple answer to this is that business likes certainty, you know, and I think if Trump turned around and said, look, these are the tariffs that are going to be in for the next 10 years, the market would adjust and they would work out how it was going to deal with that, and things would change and people would settle down. But what people cannot cope with is this constant changing and the uncertainty about what's going to happen next week, because you can't plan. You can't deploy capital properly. You can't make decisions around your business if you don't know what's going to happen next week, next month, next year. And so that's the first thing I'd say. I think that the other thing I will say this, and it will be very unpopular, I'm sure, with some people, but Trump is absolutely right with what he's doing, but he's 30 years too late.
Yeah.
You know, back in the 90s, the comparative payroll differential between the UK and China was 40 times. Back in 1995, the average pay in the UK was 16 to 18,000, and it was 40 times less in China. Now, the EU's biggest ever blunder was that they went down the track of globalization and saying, you know, well, countries that are better off using labor to make stuff should be making stuff. You know, manufacturing should flock to the cheaper places where it's cheaper to make stuff and so on. And the reality is that completely destroyed all the industry that we had in Europe and the UK, you know, and so our industrial base disappeared overnight, a couple of decades really. And our strength was the city and finance, and not everybody can be a stockbroker or a banker, I'm afraid. We need jobs. We need blue collar jobs. And we've allowed that to disappear. Now, my worry today is that China is chucking electric cars out, and some fantastic cars, at a rate of knots. Now, their average wages in China today are £12,000 a year. Mm. So how do we compete? And are we going to let them completely decimate what's left of our car industry? So goodbye to Jaguar, Land Rover, goodbye to anything, any other businesses that we have.
All right, Tony, I can't let this bloom, though unchallenged. I'm chairing the Make UK conference in the north in a few weeks' time. I know that some of the ways we compete is by getting great firms like yours, but having robots doing a lot of the stuff and having the people make the robots.
Well, which interesting enough, actually, I'm not going to do the gloom, because I think one of the things that has come out of the great growth in Asia, actually, at least from my perspective, is new markets. So, we don't ship all of our stuff to the UK or Europe. We send our stuff around the world, and that wouldn't be possible without the great engine of their growth. But I also actually do have to agree to an extent with Tony on some of the points that he makes. One of the real shames, I think, for me, is that when we set out with the ambition to buy all of our components in the UK or close by in Europe, that we've not been able to stick to that. But interestingly, though, the point you make about the robots, the issue about competitiveness, certainly with what I'm trying to do, UK versus Asia, is actually because the Asian companies have invested in the robots. Mm. So you would think if you go to somewhere like India, the reason for the low cost of manufacturing would be because of the low cost of labor. That just isn't the case. What they've got is fully automated, extremely professional production lines. Unfortunately, when I go to businesses in the UK to buy, they have not ever been able to find that capital. And actually, it's great to have Joanne here, I think, to go and talk about some of this, because, the big, I think, challenge for my UK suppliers is they've not been able to borrow money since 2008, not on the scale to actually allow them to invest. And, we talk about the poor productivity in the UK. I mean, my personal view on that is that if companies can't invest in the latest technology, they're not going to be productive, and that's the root cause of it. So, if I'm looking for something at the moment from, we were talking a bit about, what government could do for the care sector. I think for industry, and I said it's great to see Joanne here doing great things in the Northeast, by the sounds of it, for industry. It's all about having access to to debt at reasonable cost and at sensible risk, for family businesses, so they don't have to put their houses up and things like that. And that's just been impossible for over a decade now.
Well, having had you both make those very cogent points, I'm going to leave the last word to you, Joanne.
Who I'm sure could disagree.
So where do you see it going from now? And if you were coming on this programme in 6 months, do you think things will have stabilised?
I think there is some, where the challenge is, there's always opportunity for the right businesses, aren't there? So I think there will certainly be some winners out of this. And I think that there is, for some businesses that can be agile and take the steps forward to maybe capitalise on that, then let's get on and do that. I think people, in terms of tariffs, some of the high value stuff, the high technology stuff that we make here that we export to the US, I think is an opportunity there, because whilst we have tariffs, they're not as bad as they are in other locations. So actually, let's capitalise on that. But I think in 6 months' time, I think it'll still be volatile. I think it'll still be difficult. It's too short a period of time, I think. But I think we will be partly through that. Things that to do with the national insurance, things that have been a reset in budgetary terms here locally, I think that will have settled down and people will have started to make a plan for the next few years.
Well, let's just hope the Chancellor doesn't come back for more. Joanne, James and Tony, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
If you'd like to join us as a guest on the Northern Business Podcast, feel free to get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. Contact us through LinkedIn at Recognition PR. Thanks to podcast producer Alex Dryden and our technical operator, Robin Campbell.